bio, as you've all read as well, but I'm just going to give a couple of lines and then Larry can fill you in on the rest. And then 1 hour into it, I'll give Larry the word that we have 5 minutes left to speak, and then you guys can talk amongst yourselves. The only thing I ask from everyone is if you've been here before, you know, I need you to be out of here by 9 o'clock. They charge us for the custodial help if we're here any later than that. So that has happened a couple of times, but not too many times. So I'd like to welcome Larry here tonight. Larry is the president and CEO of Siebel Peabody and Arbora Global Company, founded in 1979. There are 286 professionals in 25 U.S. countries and 25 U.S. cities and 28 countries. Clients include 21% of 100 company named by Fortune magazine as best employer in the United States and 49% of the world's 100 most admired companies. So if we can put our hands together and welcome Larry, and I'm sure you guys will enjoy it very much.
Thank you very much, Mitch, and also thank you very much, Craig, for suggesting me. Can you all hear me? Anybody not hear me? Otherwise, I'll use the mic. Okay. I've got two objectives. One is the formal presentation about using cognitive science to help you answer the question, tell me about yourself. But everybody always asks me, what do I think about the economy? What's my sense of the economy? And my opinion is probably no better, no worse than anybody else's. But I'll just tell you what I think based on what I see. I look at certain leading indicators that for me have been useful. One of the leading indicators that I tend to follow is looking at the relationship between the price of the stock of manpower and the S&P 500. Manpower is a company based in Racine, Wisconsin. It is one of the world's largest temporary help staffing organizations. It's a global company, but it's biased towards the United States. Now, Manpower, the interim job market is an interesting market to look at, because when the economy starts coming up, the first thing that employers do is they hire interim people. And then when the economy really looks like it's solid, then they'll transfer the interim people to full-time people. When the economy goes down, the first thing they do is fire the interim people. So the interim agencies are very, very sensitive to changes in the economy. If you historically looked at what happened in September of 2008, manpower started tanking 3 weeks before the rest of the stock market tanked. Now, if you go and I use Yahoo Finance, just Google Yahoo space finance space profile space MAN for manpower, and then go to the basic profile, and then superimpose the S&P 500, that's the Standard & Poor's 500 index, on top of it. Look at the story. Particularly look at the last 3 months, which is what I'm looking at. The last 3 months, what you will see is a sudden lurch in manpower moving up, in totally out of correlation with the S&P 500. To me, that's a tell that something is coming up. My second leading indicator is my company. We are in the what we call the smooth leadership change business, which is a euphemism for saying when times are good, we do retain search for board members, CEOs, and CFOs. That's all we do. When times are good, we do leadership development. When times are bad, we do executive level outplacement. So our business model is really good when times are good. It's really good when times are bad. Here's where we suck. We suck when we're no longer in a recession, but there's not a recovery. In the last 2 years have been really bad for us. And the last month, we're starting to get calls, but it's calls for search. It's calls for coaching. Am I saying this is indicative? It's just another indicator that something is going on. I don't quite understand it. The only thing I do know is, you know, based on my experience, is if I read the headlines every day, I'm going to shoot myself. Because there's nothing but bad news, and there's 25 reasons why a train is going to come and hit you. But for some reason, a year from now, I hope that we can meet and you can say that I was right. I don't think 2013 is going to be a banner year. I don't think you're going to write about it to your mother, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as people think it's going to be. That's my sense, and I think we're going to be on a recovery road. The real estate market also is bottomed out, is starting to get on a recovery mode. It's in the starting process. Again, those are all good signs. So that's my sense. Does anybody have any other signs that they look at, leading indicators in the economy?
Well, a couple things is the home builders.
Yes.
They're starting to actually build homes again.
Exactly.
And they're starting to say that there is a recovery, but it's very slow.
Exactly. Now, another leading indicator is the corrugated box companies. Who's likely to find out if there's something going on? People who make boxes. Another leading indicator is a company in Clinton, Massachusetts called Nipro, the world's largest plastics extrusion company. Guess how many things are made of plastics these days? So if anything's going to go, Nipro's going to hear about it first.
I recently heard from a contract recruiter that in her business, these are people who get hired into the company to do recruiting from the outside. That there are a lot more ads for contract recruiters recently.
That's another tell. Anyway, there are some signs that spring is coming. Now, I am taping this. The microphone is placed in such a way it picks my voice, but it won't necessarily pick up your voice. If any of you would like a copy of tonight's program, please give me your business cards or scribble your name and your email, and I'll be glad to send you the presentation, the MP3 of this file. The talk tonight is how to use brain science to respond to the question, tell me about yourself. How many in the last 3 months have had somebody say to you, tell me about yourself? Okay, very common question. Here's what I wish I could say. If somebody asks me, tell me about yourself, I'm somebody who doesn't like people who says, tell me about yourself. I wish I could say that, but I never do. These are the goals of tonight's program. First, we're going to do a little exercise where you will pair up with somebody you don't know and respond to, well, tell me about yourself. And what I'd like you to do is to write down your answers. Don't write down what you think you should write down. Don't write down what you think I want to hear. Write down what you actually do say to a stranger when you meet him at a party or when you're interviewing, you say, tell me about yourself. Then I'm going to give you a framework based on our work with some of our clients, and then we're going to ask you to do it again. And let's see if there's any difference in what your thoughts are. So that's the overview for tonight. So, the ubiquitous question in job interviews, the ubiquitous question at cocktail parties, tell me about yourself. So what I'd like you to do is find somebody you don't know and pair up and then talk through it. What would you say to the question, tell me about yourself, and then write it down what you did say. And then change partners and have them do it, okay? So I'm going to give you about 10-15 minutes. I'm going to go circulate around. Any questions?
Yeah, is this a cocktail answer or is this a professional networking answer?
I think, why don't you decide with your partner what you want it to be? Okay?
Right.
I don't particularly care. Right. Whatever is more valuable for you, okay? So go find somebody you don't know, hopefully somebody next to you, and
right. I would have. I guess I'll go first. I guess I'll do a cocktail first. I get a career.
Originally, you got a degree.
Okay.
5 more minutes. Make sure the other person gets a chance. We'll be stopping in 3 minutes.
Ideally, I'd like to expand the original. Yeah. The defining.
Okay, start to conclude the conversation, please. Okay. If you could stop, please, I'd appreciate it. Why don't you all stand up and stretch? Come on, stand up and stretch. You've been sitting for too long. Stand up and stretch. Come on. All right, sit down. That's enough fun.
That isn't enough.
So, let's look at what you did say, and then we're going to have you do it again after I give this little lecture. We're going to look at the magic of the number three, and why the number three has magic. Here we are at Temple Emmanuel, and when we pray to the Lord, we say, the Father of who? Oh man, what a bunch of Jews.
Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Threes. Now, of course, so there's the number three. Of course, with Roman Catholics, when they pray to God, it's the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. Oh, there's the number three again. What a coincidence. And when I was a child, my favorite nursing rhyme was that. Of course, sometimes I liked that. And then there was Goldilocks and the Three Bears. And then as I got older, I liked the Three Musketeers. And of course, who doesn't like them?
Especially when you name Larry.
Right. And of course, we've got three strikes. And of course, we have three D's, glasses. And of course, how many? Any theater majors? Every play has three acts, and then every story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And of course, these are the characters of a movie called Harry Potter. Mm. Harry Potter, the title would imply it's about a boy. It is not about a boy, it is about a team. The last shot of the last movie in Harry Potter is the shot of the team. It's about a team of three people. Of course, my favorite movie? It's about a team of three people. Then, of course, there's the eternal dramatic triangle. And the eternal dramatic triangle is as follows. Every story has three core roles. A hero, someone in distress, and a villain. And what we call a plot twist is when you're led to believe the villain is the bad guy, and then it turns out that the villain is actually the person in distress. Or the victim is actually becomes the bad person. But everything has a dramatic triangle to it. Of course, we have three branches of government. And Freud says we have the id, the ego, the superego. The military looks at the world as land, sea, and air. And of course, we have the three primary colors. The question is, why? You look at religion, you look at literature, you look at physics, you look at almost any form of human endeavor, three keeps coming up over and over again. Before I explain why, let me explain why not. There was a classic case, for those of you who took Psychology 101, it was called Miller's Law. And it was, and there was a study published by, his name was Dollard Miller. It was called The Magic Number 7, plus or minus 3. And Miller was interested in the human brain's information capacity. What are the limits of the human brain's information capacity? So he took a bunch of undergraduate sophomores to his laboratory down in the basement and had them memorize nonsense syllables. And what he found was the average undergraduate memorizing nonsense syllables could memorize somewhere between 7 plus or minus 3. It was on the basis of that study, which was done in, I think, 1957, that the telephone company, when they were designing the phones, made it a 7-digit code with 3 codes for area code. That's why it's 10. It's based on this article. 7 to 3, 7 to 10. The human, that's the idea of the human information capacity. More recently, you can't read this, but I have this. If any of you would like a copy of the entire study, give me your business cards and I'll send you the study. It was done in the Behavioral and Brain Sciences in 2001 by Nelson Cohen, and he said as follows. Miller was wrong. He was wrong at several levels. First of all, he looked at undergraduates. What are undergraduates? They don't have much in their brains except sex, drugs, and rock and roll anyway. So they got lots of capacity to memorize stupid nonsense syllables. Second is the process was using nonsense syllables which have no emotional connotation. Now, in the real world, while we're trying to memorize things and absorb information, there's a lot going on in our brains. That's number one. Number two is, while we're trying to absorb information, some of the information that we absorb have neutral value, and some of the information that we get has high emotional value. Your stock just went down by 25%. Your daughter just broke her leg. These are all non-neutral pieces of information. So how do adults who are working absorb information when some of the information is non-neutral? And that's what this study is all about. Guess what? The article says the magic number 4. So her conclusion is the real number is 4. I think she's too optimistic. That for those of us who are adults, busy, living in the real world, 4 is even too extravagant. The real number is 3. The magic number is 3. People will remember 3 bits of information about you. Don't expect them to remember any more. And you're lucky if they remember 3 things about you. If you this is not something you should do tonight, but it's something that you could do if you want. If you're going to be talking about yourself in a room such as this, you may want to go to a job bank such as Indeed.com, which is a meta job search engine. Look for jobs that you're qualified for and interested in, and find 3 technical and soft skills that the market says it's looking for. The reason why I like Indeed or any of these classified ads is businesses are spending millions of dollars every year to tell you what they're interested in. Are you listening? This is not about you. This is a marketing exercise. Go read the ads. What are the words that keep coming up over and over and over again? This will explain how old I am. I remember a time when zero-based budget was a big deal. Nobody talks about that anymore. I remember a time quality circles was a big deal. Nobody talks about that. What are the cliché du jour today? What are the words that will get somebody's ears pricking? So go to Indeed, find the words. And here's your script. I'm going to leave this out. Here's the script that we discuss with our clients in our executive outplacement practice. The script is as follows. Let's say I am a production inventory control and specialist. There are many qualified production people in the marketplace today, and I would consider myself one of them. But the three things that I think separate me from my colleagues are 1, 2, 3. Now, the reason for this script is that you don't want to say anything negative about anybody, but you are engaged in an exercise where you're trying to differentiate from your competitors, and your competitors are the other people. So the script is, there are many qualified people who do the work that I do today. I would consider myself to be one of those qualified people. However, three things that make me somewhat uniquely qualified are 1, 2, 3. Now, we don't have the ability to go indeed to figure out what those three things are, but when you get home, you could do that. So now I want you to try this. I want you to write it down first, and then go back to the person that you were meeting, and then try the new script out, and then have the other person try their script, and then see what's the difference between what you're saying now versus what you're saying then. Yes?
Are these listing three keywords, are you looking for, or would you advise a greater elaboration? You have either a proof statement that supports what you're saying, or a definition of the word, you know. So if I use myself an example, I say machine learning. Three people are going to understand what that is, or do I describe it as, you know, trying to find insights from large bodies?
Well, context is everything. You're in this room with people. The person next door may or may not understand that.
Exactly.
So pick three things that would appeal to that person, and make that person want to say, "Oh, okay, let me help you." Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Again, let me go over the script. There are many qualified people that do what I do in the market today. What I do is I'm a CFO. What separates me from other qualified CFOs would be I have 10 years in the retail experience. I've been involved with three mergers and acquisitions, and I've done an initial public offering. 1, 2, 3. Think of three things you want that person to remember. Now, if it's a job interview, and a person says, "Well, tell me about yourself," then you pretty much know what the three things are from the job description, or you can guess by doing some research on. In the company. But if it's a meeting like this where you really don't know the what they're looking for, you have to come up with how are you going to differentiate yourself in the marketplace. Okay? So write it down and then rehearse. Thank you. By the way, let me give you a one suggestion. I'm looking at the audience, and I see a number of people with gray hairs. I see a number of people who are probably around my age. It's not news to anybody. Age discrimination is alive and well in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And nobody is going to tell you that they are not going to hire you because of age, because it's illegal to say that. But you know that is the case. So maybe one of the things for those of you who are on the older side, I would say that's 55 and older, think about the stereotypes that you have to deal with. One of the issues is there are some companies, they just want young people. If you don't have a young face, they don't want you. I will never work at Reebok. I know it. I just don't have the physique. I don't have the look. I'm just not the type. But there are other issues that are more subtle and insidious, such as you spent 20 years at your last company. Can you unlearn everything that you learned? Do you know how to unlearn fast and do things our way? Or are you going to try to adopt the old stuff that you did back then to this environment? Do you have the energy? Do you have the curiosity? So again, you can as one of your things, you can sort of deal with the concerns that you perceive that people may have when they're dealing with people of your age. Like any defect, if you don't raise it, if you don't control it, if you don't attack with it, then you've lost control of it. How many have written down what they want? How many need some more time? Okay, give you a little more time. Okay, if you would, now pair up with the person you were with before, and now go through the same introductions that you did before, and then compare the first set of introductions to this set of introductions, and then we'll discuss it as a group, okay?
Tell me about yourself,
so people would do that.
Yeah.
So what I'm suggesting, this is the new script.
Right.
Yeah.
The three things that make sense to me too.
A short way down.
Right.
I try to find things that are really big.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote my three things down.
Okay. So practice with each other.
Okay.
Something like that as your first paragraph in a cover letter. Something like, I realize there are many qualified candidates applying to this job, but however, I feel there's three, these are the qualities that
I think. Well, if this is the first, if this is a cover letter in response to an ad, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I would like your first paragraph not to be about you. Because you must assume that the reader truly doesn't care about you. The first paragraph should be about the company. In other words, the company, you know, I read with interest your ad. I was inspired to do some research about your company, and I noticed you just launched the new XYZ product, and you had a very good earnings statement in the last quarter. Congratulations. In other words, make the first paragraph about them, not about you. Now, then you can go into you.
But don't
assume the reader cares about you.
Yeah.
You're always better off assuming the reader cares about themselves.
Okay. Yeah.
You might use this more.
Yes. I mean, you know, you want to have sort of you want to assume that you'll be asked a question like this. Another variation of this is, why should we hire you? Well, there are three reasons. You know, I'm sure you see a lot of qualified CFOs, but I think the thing that one may make you want to look at me would be 1, 2, 3. Yeah, but if you say 16, they're not going to remember anything.
Oh, yeah. So just customize that based on whether it's a hallway networking conversation versus an interview conversation.
Yeah, but you need a sort of a basic generic response when you're in a room like this, or Thanksgiving parties or Christmas parties. Okay?
This is maybe cheating, turning the three into six, but we can make the claim. Can we say, and how we did it? So it's closely related, you know what I'm saying? Or is that too elaborative?
I think you're getting too promotional. What you're trying to do is hook somebody's interest.
Yeah.
What you're hoping to do is you're engaged in a... Well, give me context. Would this be a job interview or a cocktail party?
Job.
Okay. So hopefully you've done some research about the company.
Yeah.
What is your area?
Software sales.
Okay.
Management. Sales and marketing.
So if you know something about the company and you've done some research about what's important to them, you can sort of decide what three things.
I get it. Okay. All right.
And the idea is, if let's say you know that they're going to be doing some international expansion, or you assume that going to China is a logical thing for them, and they're not in China right now, and you say, you know, the three things about me that separate me from my colleagues, and one of them is I've opened a Chinese distribution operations.
All right.
Oh, really? Tell me about that. Now you know they're interested.
Okay.
But you don't want to overload somebody if they're not interested in hearing it.
Right. I get it.
guys doing?
I like this. I like it.
Thank you.
It opens the door to say, here's my three examples that illustrate the evidence. I'm going to introduce some evidence.
So what have you got?
Three things might be bad in Mexico, my MRP implementation and utilization.
Yeah.
Then I talk about the 6-week project that I ran.
No, this is a...
It's an interest.
This is an interview or this is a cocktail party. You don't want to get into... If they're interested, tell me about that. Then you can get into it.
My lean manufacturing techniques and elimination of waste. My international experience, which includes living in Germany for 3 years.
Perfect. Yep.
Pique somebody's interest.
Again, in a job interview, presumably, you'll do some research about the company.
And then tailor their pain points.
Right. So if you know that...
Implementing an MRP system. Right. Facing lean challenges.
Right.
And get an office over in Paris.
Right.
Düsseldorf.
Right.
I like it.
Good. The other thing, it's a structure that sort of forces people not to say the typical thing. Well, I live in Methuen, I've got three kids, and I'm a coach on the softball team.
It gets you off the stage in 60 seconds or less.
Exactly.
So you know this natural food store in Medellin?
Five more minutes.
Hi, Larry, it's good to see you again.
We have seen each other many times.
Yeah, we have several.
Suffolk, right?
Mostly down at Suffolk University.
Yes, good.
You come down and speak there a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm executive residence there.
Oh.
So that's why I do.
Yep. Okay.
Nice to see you again.
They haven't hired me as a teacher yet, but I've made an amazing late-in-life career change from being a cubicle-bound introvert analyst to a on-platform professor of economics. As an adjunct.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Teaching at 4 different schools currently. Got 6 classes, 5 days a week on 5 different campuses.
I think it's fine. I had one of these aha moments. Somebody was telling me that they were at a program with they saw a TV show with a bunch of very esteemed people, and they were talking about aging. And one of the people on the panel was Dr. Watson, the double helix guy. And he was quiet during the whole program. And then finally the host turns to Dr. Watson and says, what would you recommend in terms of having effective aging? He says, stay away from old people. And I think he's right. I look at all the people I know at gated communities in Florida.
Yeah.
You're better off hanging around young people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of my classes are night adult ones, but I do have a freshman class at Northern Essex, and I've got a fifth-year MBA class at
in economics.
Teaching managerial economics at the grad level, and I teach micro macro undergrad.
Okay.
And I have a freshman college success seminar I'm teaching at Northern Essex.
Good for you.
In the spring, they've been asking me if I would teach a computer applications course at Microsoft Office.
Sounds good.
I like it. It's not the income I used to have, but I've managed to do it.
It's
part of the way I got in. I was Navy.
Yeah.
Electronics trained in the Navy. Somebody said, gotta go to school, GI Bill. So I did undergrad at EMAS, grad at Suffolk.
Right.
And then decided 7.5 years next to master's wasn't enough.
Right.
So I taught 4 years next in Hampshire College.
Right.
Got away from that. Was getting bored with my day job. This is what I've ever done in my life that you love. And I'm used to doing today's teach. Just by sheer luck, I'm going to call this each year. Salem campus, where I live.
Good.
So, Gavin, I'm going to start that job. Your answer is, well, only if you teach economics.
Yeah.
That's funny. When I talked to you folks 30 years ago, micro and macro were two of my five core courses, and they ran it up by Manchester, and I've been back there since 2007.
Excellent.
So I'm now in my 10th year of teaching.
Good for you.
But a little 27-year break in between. And I just keep adding skills.
Congratulations. Good for you. Okay, 3 minutes, and then we'll stop. Okay, start to wind it down. Start to wind it down. All right, if you would, just stand up and stretch. Stand up and stretch. Thank you. All right. All right, sit down. That's enough of that. So, you've now gone through this exercise. Tell me about yourself twice. The first, the way you normally do it. The second, with a structure. Would anybody like to comment on the difference between the first and the second? Sir?
Actually, I have a question.
Sure.
We have a question.
Sure.
The question is only two of us.
Okay.
You can be the third.
Oh, all right.
He's the villain.
What's the question?
How long had you expected us to, time period to fill with this? How much detail? I took it to go on and explain and cover whatever. And
he had three paragraphs, I had three phrases.
I would say three phrases, not three paragraphs. The idea in a cocktail party, as well as a job interview, is don't be boring. You're not as fascinating as you think. if you just make it a little bullet points, and then somebody's interested, tell me more. But if your bullet point is really not your main, let's say, for example, I talked to somebody, I lived in Germany and started German operations. Well, I have no interest in Germany. So why should we spend time on that? So bullet points, not paragraphs. Other questions or comments? How would you compare the two? Yeah?
So one of the things that I liked about the three bullet point idea is that it gives you a good idea of when to shut up.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Actually, that is very profound. No. It is. It is. Who's in HR in the audience? No, you are. Who else in HR? One of my most effective techniques when I'm interviewing people as a recruiter is I'll say, "Tell me about yourself," and then they blah blah blah, blah. And then I say nothing, and I don't look them in the eyes. I'm looking down at a piece of paper, and guess what? Some people then go blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. I've had one guy who told me he was an alcoholic and was going through a divorce. I never asked him that for the pressure of silence. He just couldn't stand it, and so I got a lot more information by just saying nothing. The second reason why I would do this in an interview is particularly for a senior executive role is I want to know, how do you organize your thoughts? Do you know when to shut up? When enough is enough? Can you organize your thoughts? Can you prioritize? And so a question like that could be done for that purpose. So structure like this is, once I've done with my three bullets, I'm finished. It's balls in your court to follow up. So that's another reason to structure this response.
So, okay, I've said my three bullets. You're still looking at the piece of paper. How do I get you talking?
Most people don't interview the way I do, thankfully.
No, I was trying to get you talking about something, about what is it about this position? What? Tell me what...
Fine, you can ask the question,
but,
sure.
But if you're looking down at a piece of paper, are you going to stop and answer me? Or are you going to sit there in silence? Because if you're sitting there in silence, yeah, what's going to happen? I'm going to get up and walk out.
Fine. That's, and that would be an appropriate response. But I've had people who don't. Next. I'm sorry?
Repeat what he said.
Oh, he said he would ask, you know, in response to my silence, he would say, well, tell me about the job, which is an appropriate response. The person I was interviewing didn't do that. He had a need to continue to talk about himself until he got permission from me that he had completed enough. So he got into a trap. And yeah?
Hopefully insightful. In the first example, cocktail party, yeah. In reviewing this, this were all ego strokes for me. The second time through, it was focused on what information do you need if you're interested in hiring me.
Right.
And it's more about you than it is about
right. me. This is a marketing exercise. It's not about you. It's about the person who's going to be signing a check to hire you. And so if this forces you to sort of say, what is going to be in that person's interest, that's fine. I was going around and I heard some of you starting the conversation with as follows. I live in Methuen. I've got a wife and three children, and I'm a coach in the Little League. Well, once you start down that path, you're now spending precious time talking about something that's not really of interest to an employer, and may not even be of interest to the person who you're talking with. So what this does, it forces you to focus on job-related issues. Yep?
Larry, I took up on one of your other points, too. When I made my three bullet points, I did relate the first one to something. Since I'm over 21, I related something. I said, I've got these two certifications, which I've just gotten in the last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
which basically means I'm keeping my skills young.
Yep. Again, if you've got three bullets to play with, I would go into the marketplace, Indeed.com or whatever job search engine you use, find out what are the buzzwords that are hot. Make sure you've got the most important buzzwords. Then the last one might be, and I keep my skills current. I remain on the cutting edge of our profession. So you can put it all in one bullet.
Yeah.
Then if I'm interested, I'd say, well, how do you keep current? If I'm not interested, I won't follow up. Any other?
I just had a comment. I think it forces you to be clear and concise and get to the point and get with it, but it also shows an air of confidence during the interview, even though you might be nervous going into it. If you can, like you say, think of it in bullet terms and not try to ramble. That's been my problem sometimes, is to ramble on and on.
Right.
And wait and see, you know, and wait and
right.
see what happens. Did I answer your question? Maybe I might say something like that rather than ramble on. Have I answered your question enough? And then, so that will prevent me from continuing.
And the structure is designed to prevent you from rambling. This is the same structure to respond to the following question. What can you do for us? Why should we hire you? If you look at the debates, the presidential debates between Romney and Obama, I'm not making a political point here, just looking at a communications point. Romney has been trained to talk about his 5-point plan. Obama is pointing out that the plan doesn't have any depth. But people remember there's a 5-point plan. And I think in the end it's going to help Romney, because Obama hasn't issued his 5-point plan. So Romney keeps over and over and over again. Here's the 5-point plan. This is your 3-point plan. Any other questions? So let's summarize and conclude. Tell me about yourself is the all-purpose question in job interviews. It's the standard question in cocktail parties. It is also the question, really the disguised question is, what can you do for me? It really is the question, why should we hire you? How are you going to answer that? What I have suggested is, cognitive science says, our ability to absorb new information is basically limited to 3 new bits of information. You select the 3 bits of information that you want to convey to somebody else, and you use a structure in which to do it. And by using a structure within which to do it, you avoid going off on tangents by talking about the kids and the baseball and the house and the spouse. But you focus on the business end. Also, you come in with a theme that you want to stress over and over again. If it's working for you, fine, keep it. If it's not working for you, you drop it, you try 3 other things. This is a marketing exercise that you're doing. Again, the last thing about the structure that I want to emphasize is the way in which the structure is written, you're not bragging. You're basically saying, there are lots of competent people out there who do what I do. I consider myself one of those. However, what separates me from my colleagues is. So what you're doing is differentiating, not bragging. Any questions about anything that you've done tonight? If you're interested in more information, we have a blog in Psychology Today magazine called Platform for Success. You could just Google Platform for Success, Psychology Today, and then you could go to our website, which is called stibelpeabody.com, and we have a lot of useful public resources in something called Resources. Just go to Resources. It's all free. If any of you would like the MP3 of this tonight's presentation, give me your business cards and I'll be glad to give it to you. I'll also give you the PowerPoint slides if you wish. Thank you very much.
Can you go back? You're good. Can you go back one more?
Go back one more? Sure.
Did you practice?
Oh, cool. Good.
So at this point, what I'd like you to do is...